Part 13, Chapter 8. Johnny came out of it. The shock of the crash had knocked him out for a moment. He guessed he was getting tired with the strain and the cold. A jolt like that shouldn't have knocked him out. Then he found his left knee was bruised from hitting the console. The fingernails of his left hand were bleeding from stubbing on keys, and his forehead ached. He decided it must have been a harder crash than he thought. The magnetic grip brake was on, but peering, he was having a hard time seeing it. He took off his air mask and found that his forehead had been cut on the mask faceplate rim, and the blood was getting in his eyes. He reached back and got the tail end of a mining tarpaulin and staunched the blood and wiped out the faceplate. Now he could see. The landing had been successful. An ancient gag he had found on a cartoon card over at their base occurred to him.
A successful landing is one you can walk away from.
Well, he could walk, he hoped. The ship was slewed. The wind pressure had come off the nose as it went in, but it was still on the tail. The tail was sticking way out of the door, but was pushed over against the side of the door frame. Was the ship hurt? He looked around inside. The main motor housing and the two right and left balance housings seemed all right. He reached for the door latch to get out, and then something tugged at his memory. Something about the crash. What was it? Ah, something must have exploded in the drone. He dimly recalled hearing a series of explosions. He reached over to the pilot window and touched it, intending to wipe some steam from it. It was hot. Yes, something had exploded in this drone. Well, that was a good sign, maybe. It meant something could break in this place. He looked at the gas canisters, vivid in the plain lights. They looked sound. He saw that they were also armored and that all the cables to them were as well. He looked around through the ship's windows in dismay. This place was as armored inside as outside. What an unpleasant view. Structural rib frames, very deep. Floor plates for loading only, having gaps on both sides of the walkway. Cross braces. Toward the tail, there were a series of holes like a beehive. Ah, additional gas canister spaces. The thing was only about a third full, but enough. Enough to wipe out any place it was going. How much time did he have? He looked at his watch, and it was shattered. There were no clocks in these battle planes. The clocks were all down in the console cabinets and had no faces anyway. Only lapsed time dials on the dash. He realized he wouldn't know when radio silence ended. He tried to compute by sunrise, but he didn't know where he was beyond a few hours short of Scotland. Abruptly, he realized he was maundering. Still a bit dazed? He put the air mask on and made sure it was snug in case a gas canister had cracked in the crash, which he doubted. He checked to see whether Turl's blast gun was still there. Yes, fallen on the floor. He might need it to try to cut cables. He put it in his belt and got out of the plane. The thunder of these motors was deafening. Arctic wind curled in at the door. The night lay like a black pit below them. He examined the gas canisters. No, the plane hadn't even touched them. Nothing could touch them from the looks of it. They were covered with the crud of extreme age. He found a half-obliterated date. A cyclo date. These things dated from the original attack. Spares? Not used in that attack? No, another date. They had been refilled about 25 years later. The hope that they were expended died. They were live, all right. Where were the controls of this thing? Ah, way up forward. Best look at those. There just might be a chance that he could change settings and, in extremis, simply pull the wires loose. He walked up along the plates. His plane's lights were bright, even up front. There was the setting box. a preset. And there was the console one set the preset plates in. Fat lot of good the console was. Like a stamping machine. He looked at the preset box. One usually fed preset plates into the side and latched the box. Here, too. But this one? It was armored. It had a keyhole. He looked around, but there was no key left behind. Cables? All armored. And they even went into the preset box with an armored connection. Crud was all around. Lord, this thing was old. It was only clean around the preset box. He supposed they had cleaned it up to set it. A vague feeling of unease troubled him. Completely aside from his intentness on stopping this drone, there was something odd in this place. He looked down toward the plane. The deep recesses between the frames were in complete darkness. Zit, unseen in a recess not 6 feet away, crouched back in desperation. His wits were racing. What did he know about Tolneps? Shortly after he had graduated from Mechanics College on Cyclo, he had done a duty tour on Arcaniabes, where the company had mines. It was in this universe. The system star was the double star he sometimes saw in winter on this planet. The smaller star of the dumbbell had a weight so dense that a half cubic inch of it here would weigh 1 ton. A mine site had been wiped out utterly by a Tolnep raid. They came from somewhere near the star cluster he often saw here. They had mastered time control and could hold it frozen, and their ships made long piratical voyages. The company had analyzed several of their dead bodies. What did he remember about them? What weakness? He could think only of strengths. Their bite was deadly poison. They had a body density comparable to iron. They were immune to cyclo gas. They couldn't be killed with an ordinary blast gun. Weaknesses, weaknesses, weaknesses? If he didn't recall them, he would never get out of this alive. Never. This one was walking back down past him now. He shrank against the ship's skin. It didn't see him here in the darkness. Then he remembered. Their eyesight. That was why they always wore face masks. They saw in infrared only and had to have a filter plate. They went totally blind when subjected to shorter wavelength light, and they could be killed only with ultraviolet weapons. They were intensely allergic to cold and had a body heat of around 200 degrees, or was it 300? No matter. He was onto it. It was eyesight. Without its faceplate, that creature would be blind. Zit planned carefully. The instant he got a chance, he would knock off the faceplate, leap forward, and claw the thing's eyes out, somehow avoiding the poison teeth. Zit's paw slid down to the side of his boot, and he got out his trusty big wrench. He could throw it like a projectile. Don't hit the body, hit the side of the mask. Zit then drew from his breast pocket the small round mirror with its long handle that he used to look in the back of connections or the underside of bearings. He carefully extended the mirror around the edge of the frame, praying to the crap nebula the thing wouldn't notice it. He began to watch the creature. Johnny found it very hard to walk in the rolling drone. The floor plates were not meant for walking and had gaps on both sides. He went clear to the back end of the drone, quite a walk in itself. He looked at the strange honeycomb. It was bottle racks for additional load. He crawled in the entry port. Maybe some cables or something overlooked would be in there. He could barely get through the port and wondered how a cyclo could, until he realized it was just for canister loading of the racks. Clumsy. Just racks. Bad design. The ports were toward the center, and it was only blank bulkhead on either side. Nothing else here. He went back toward the forward end. He stopped just beyond the ship. He thought very hard. He could see nothing that could be pulled apart, nothing that could be blasted apart. He could even blow up his ship in here, and nothing would happen. No controls. The drone was not made to be flown, but just set and launched. Not even the remote Turl had shown him would do anything now. Rolling like a huge, ungainly drunk, the thing continued on its way with death in its jaws. Insensate. Invulnerable. He wasn't seeing so well again. Blood had started flowing when he crawled into the hole back there, and he'd knocked his mask. He lifted his hands to the mask, turning sideways to lessen the blast from the door. He was reaching for the edge of his jacket to wipe it off. With the impact of a bullet, the mask was hit. It flew from his hand. Something had almost broken his left thumb. There was motion about 30 feet away. Mountain training and a hunter's life had left nothing wanting in Johnny's reactions. The action of dropping to one knee, drawing, and firing the blast gun did not take more than a third of a second. He fired at the mass that had begun to come at him. The shots drove it back with sheer force. Again and again, he fired. The thing, whatever it was, moved back into the cover of the rib frames near the preset. There was something or someone in here with him. He had walked right past it twice when he went to the preset box.